Test 1-2, test 1-2.
The order will start with the calling of the roll.
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Axness.
Here.
Klein.
Here.
Shidley.
Here.
Schneider.
Here.
Triplett. Unruh. Boydner.
Here.
Representatives Carlson.
Here.
Belter.
Here.
Devlin.
Here.
Doctor.
Here.
Hogan.
Here.
Nelson. Onstead.
Here.
Ruby. Schmidt.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Representative Nelson and Senator Triplett had notified us that they would be unable to be here, and I heard from Senator Unruh, she's on her way, she should be here any minute. So, next is consideration of minutes from the last meeting of June 16th. Have a motion to approve, is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. I have some comments. Legislative management is meeting today for a unique purpose to fulfill our statutory responsibilities to coordinate the determination of the estimated fiscal impact of initiated measures. The duty was required in 2005 in the enactment of North Dakota Century Code 16.101-17, which requires legislative management to hold a hearing and gather information on the estimated fiscal impact of initiated measures. This law resulted from the passage by the citizens of North Dakota an amendment to the state constitution in 2004, which permits the legislative assembly to provide by law a procedure through which legislative management may establish an appropriate method for determining the fiscal impact of an initiated measure and for making the information regarding the fiscal impact of the measure available to the public. Secretary of State has notified us that he has determined three initiated measures qualify for the general election ballot: an initiated constitutional amendment that relates to the rights and protections of crime victims, measure number three, and two initiated statutory measures relating to an increase in taxes on cigarettes and tobacco products and the allocation of the taxes, that's measure four, and relating to the medical use of marijuana, measure number five. We are following basically the same procedures and policies as followed in previous years and during legislative sessions to obtain fiscal notes. Though state agencies determine to have either the best information on the impact of a measure or the primary responsibility for compiling and maintaining that information that is needed, have been invited to present their findings at this meeting of legislative management. It should be understood that our only purpose for holding this meeting is to meet our statutory responsibilities to obtain fiscal note information on each measure, and we are not here today to hear testimony on the impact of a measure or the primary responsibility for complying and maintaining that information. I just skipped to an old paragraph. Sorry about that. How come they're two sentences the same? Anyway, we are not here to hear testimony on the merits of the measure. We only hear information on the ballot measure in the order of their placement on the ballot. At the conclusion of the testimony and discussion, I will entertain a motion regarding the fiscal notes presented on the initiated measures and to direct the Legislative Council staff to forward the information to the Secretary of State as provided for in Section 16.101-17.1. This is to be provided 30 days before the vote on November 8th. So, the Office of Management and Budget is asked to give us some estimates on the fiscal impact of the initiated constitutional measure relating to the rights of crime victims. And Pam, are you making that presentation?
And Mr. Chairman, members of the legislative management, there's a packet in front of each member, one for each of the three measures that are before you. So the first one would be the letter from OMB. The second one would be the letter from the tax commission relating to the cigarette tax. And then the last one is measure five relating to the medical use of marijuana. So you have in those documents, you have the statement from the affected agency, as well as the initiated measure.
Go ahead, Pam.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. OMB was asked to put together the fiscal note for initiated measure number three, Marcy's Law. Since we don't have like first-hand knowledge of what the fiscal impacts will be for each agency, we invited several agencies together to talk about it and asked those agencies that did have a fiscal impact to put that information together. So attached to my cover letter is two pages of information that agencies have put together regarding the impact for this measure. If it is approved in the November 16 general election, it will become effective 30 days after, and the fiscal impact for the remainder of the current biennium is $1,156,000, and the fiscal impact for the 2017-19 biennium is $3,966,000. So the handout here shows that the Department of Human Services will have a fiscal impact of $65,000. North Dakota County governments will have an impact of $1.7 million. The Supreme Court would have an impact of $49,000. Commission on Legal Counsel for Indigents would have an impact of $916,000. Department of Corrections, $768,000. Protection and Advocacy, $426,000. And the total of all of those amounts together equals the $3.9 million. So what we did for the rest of the current biennium is we just prorated that $3.9 million down to a seven-month period. I will say that if you have any questions regarding the details of the impact of these entities' costs, several of them are in the room here today to answer those questions, as I would not be able to answer those.
Please, you gave us a list then of the agencies that feel there would be a fiscal impact on them, and the agency put together an estimate on what that would cost for the next biennium. Is there any member of or members of legislative management that want to ask specific questions, if there are some, on the agencies that might be present here today regarding their fiscal number, their number?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Schneider.
Mr. Chairman and Pam, I don't know if this is a question for any specific agency, but can you just speak to the confidence factor here? I mean, how assured should we feel about this being the impact? I was reading ahead to the Department of Health document that they prepared, and they said the department's confidence in the numbers is not high. Obviously, that's not what you're presenting on right now, but I mean, can you just talk to that issue of confidence? How strongly do you feel that these numbers are accurate?
Well, I will say that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Schneider, I will say that the individuals in these agencies and entities that I spoke to and that put this information together, I have a high level of confidence in those individuals. I really cannot address I'm not a lawyer. I really cannot weigh in on the fiscal impacts myself.
Are there any additional questions of Ms. Sharp? Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any interested persons that want to speak about the fiscal impact of the initiated measure? If not, then we will move to the next item. Presentation by representative of the tax department regarding the estimated fiscal impact of the initiated statutory measure relating to an increase in taxes on cigarettes and tobacco products and the allocation of such taxes. We have the commissioner here. Welcome.
Hello. It was all because that damn youth edition that I put that in.
Yeah, no, we had to.
Bankrupt.
We had to. There's no choice. Now, and this one is as bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awful.
The backgrounds are off for the last thing you need is to come over to a couple of them.
Well, the thing is, they can't spend the money they've already got. They don't know what to do with it. Give it a ball.
But their hands are off.
Yeah, well, that's how they bought their sport.
What is that? What is that paper?
Mr. Chairman, are you short copies? Do we need some more? I can grab, I have some more back here in my stack. There should just be two sheets. One's double-sided, the other is a spreadsheet.
Okay, we have the double-sided one up here. Oh, the other one is coming. Okay, we have, I think, everyone should have two sheets.
Two sheets.
Okay. Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ryan Rauschenberger, Tax Commissioner. As required, we have prepared a fiscal note for the tobacco tax initiated and measured. We have essentially a white paper that goes through all of our assumptions. That this is prepared essentially the same way that we prepared all of our tobacco tax legislative changes when it comes to the rate. This is a little different in the sense that the base of tobacco tax is changing, so it's a little more complicated, a little more involved. That's why we provided essentially a summary of what's going on in the bill, where assumptions came from on the white paper, and then the calculation of our total fiscal note of what the measure would actually generate. So, Mr. Chairman, I can give you the extremely high-level short version. I can go through the white paper if you'd like me to. I can go through it fairly quickly. It's up to you what version you would like.
Go through it quickly.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, as you know, the tobacco tax measure increases a pack of the tax on a pack of cigarettes from 44 cents to $2.20. We do factor in also essentially commensurate increase in other tobacco products, so your non-cigarette tobacco products, cigars, snuff, chew, everything else will go up. Essentially the wholesale tax will double. What's important about this is that we will be shifting from essentially on cigarettes will go from 44 cents to $2.20, and then we'll be shifting on other tobacco products from in some circumstances a per ounce tax to a wholesale tax. Also important is the inclusion of e-cigs. Currently those are only subject to sales tax. This requires those to be subject to now this essentially new excise tax equivalent to other tobacco products, so 56% on the wholesale price. So that is essentially a new tax base that we're looking at. And in all of these, as we have normally prepared in tobacco tax fiscal notes with increasing the rate, there's a commensurate elasticity of demand decrease in the consumption. So -0.6% in the price elasticity calculations gives us essentially an overall reduction in cigarettes of 20% in consumption. Again, basically the same thing that we've produced in the past. And then in other tobacco products, the increase in tax would reduce consumption by about 11%. And that's highlighted or underlined and bolded on your handouts. And 22% decrease in consumption in e-cigs. On the backside, keep in mind that this will increase the sales tax is based on the actual price being that it's being sold at. Tobacco tax is at the wholesale level. That increases the retail price tax that's all associated in this. That essentially does increase the overall sales tax that's collected based on the wholesale price going up because of the increase in tax from the wholesaler. The Attorney General's office was also consulted because they license tobacco retailers and wholesalers. They have a $21,500 fiscal note, $20,400 expenditure fiscal note, but also with an increase of $21,500 in their fees. And that is, to my knowledge, primarily because now vape shops and other shops that were not actual tobacco distributors are now considered tobacco distributors in this. So that's why there's fee increases, but they also see expenditure increases for administrative purposes on the other side. So fairly commensurate increase in fees with expenditures from the Attorney General's office. And then really the distribution of revenue is where we see the major changes here. The state general fund will receive 50% of tobacco tax revenue, approximately 18.2% of the cigarette tax revenue, and 91.3 of sales tax revenue. The real reason for that is state aid distribution. The increase in that will, of course, go to the political subdivision. That's why the 91.3% number is there. Essentially, if you go through this spreadsheet, what happens is the general fund sees about an impact of $1.8 million. It's essentially in a hold harmless situation where the increased tax is essentially going off to these two new funds. One is the Veterans Tobacco Tax Trust Fund, which is expected to receive an estimated $36.6 million in fiscal year 2018, and compare that to $36.6 million going to the Community Health Trust Fund in 2018. So essentially, 18 and 19 added together on your spreadsheet, we're essentially looking at an overall increase in revenues and essentially going to those two funds of $140 million. So roughly $140 million is our estimation of what, and again, calculating it just like we have many other bills that show an increase in tax similar to this, with the decrease in consumption, but the increase in tax rate is $140 million of additional revenue. So, Mr. Chairman, a lot of moving parts. That was the quick version. So I'd be happy to try answer any questions. Kathy Strombeck is not here, so I'll try to do my best to answer any of the assumptions. There's a much, much more complicated spreadsheet that goes into this based on the current, and I want to mention this is based on the current, most recent forecast that's been adopted. So it's really this summer forecast that we use in our cash flow, just as we always do with fiscal notes, but it's the most recent information.
The price elasticity formula that you utilize is not unique to North Dakota. Is this an industry standard regarding what happens when the price of the tobacco tax has gone up in New York, what happened, et cetera?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that coefficient is pretty much a standard that, you know, Kathy, you talked to other states, that is what we've used in the past and has not changed very much over time. But that's, and I believed those others have used that same number looking at North Dakota and other states. So I'd say that's an industry standard.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed about a hearing, but I just have one point of clarification about how the cigarettes are taxed on the reservation. I can't remember if we have compacts with them or don't have compacts with them. And is that calculated into how this works on the number?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, no. This is first I'll say that we do have some. We do not have a compact with three affiliated tribes. We do with Standing Rock and Turtle Mountain. We do not with Turtle Mountain, but we do with Standing Rock. And that is not, I don't believe there are any assumptions that go into this. Essentially, we would have to, if this changed, the existing compact with Standing Rock would have to be amended. The only way we can administer that compact or that agreement is if it's the same as the state. So those rates would have to go up, or else they'd essentially have to administer their own.
Follow up on that.
Yes, please.
Do they charge the same 44 cents today, all of them, or do they not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, no. They on the reservation, those that do not have any kind of agreement with us are not charging the tax. If they are essentially tribally owned or a member owned entity, they do not they are not charged the tax, and they do not remit.
So these
any
assumptions
tax
would not take into account any increase or decrease in sales, or is that in the formula because they would be going there to buy it? I'm just trying to figure out for creating an opportunity where ours goes down and somewhere else picks it up, or what's the deal?
Mr. Chairman, one thing that is taken into consideration, I forgot to mention, kind of along that same line is cross-border. It's kind of the same issue, but right now with Minnesota, we have a lot of cross-border sales, essentially. You look at Fargo cigarette sales, they are they really did spike up when Minnesota increased their tobacco tax rate. We actually did shrink our base by 5% in this, which we hadn't. That's a difference from old fiscal notes. We did shrink that overall because of our price of cigarettes getting closer to Minnesota's. So we did take that into consideration, but essentially the issue of non-tax cigarettes is a consideration that we'd probably have to look at potentially during the session if this were to pass, as far as tribal versus non-tribal, so tax versus non-tax.
Well, I guess it gets back to my basic question in the end. Is that figured into your numbers, those whatever you call that factor that you reduce the sales, the number of packs sold because of the tax and the increase? Is that figuring in the reservation's presence in our state?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe so. And Representative Carlson, I do not believe there is an adjustment made for essentially those tribal sales that would increase potentially and decrease the state paid sales tax base. I do not believe. I can double check. I can double check with Kathy if that was figured in. Again, there's a much more complicated spreadsheet that I didn't think we had time to go through today that takes into consideration a lot of different factors, but that could be in there, but I can't say for sure.
Representative Belcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, and maybe you covered this, but we have the cross-border purchases now, and I think it's pretty safe to say that when people come over to buy cigarettes, they're also buying other things when they're making their trip to North Dakota. Was any of that taken into account in this estimate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Belter, no, we did not. We did not decrease, for example, general sales tax collections because of sales that are occurring from North Dakota retailers, for example, of additional sales. We did not figure anything outside of the tobacco tax and the impact on sales tax from the tax increase. So we did not essentially look at the ripple effect of what that would have. It could, but to quantify that would be, I think, difficult on our part.
Thank you.
That's a good point, Mr. Chairman, Representative Belter.
Any other questions? Senator Klein.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ryan, legally, how many cartons of cigarettes can you buy on the reservation and take off the reservation?
Mr. Chairman, I would say...
What would you do with this?
I know the answer, by the way. It's two.
Yeah, it's two.
Living where I live,
Mr. Chairman,
being the business I'm in, you can see when you're putting groceries in the backseat of someone's car and they've got 10, and there are like four different flavors, you know somebody has been to the casino. But how do we regulate that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klein, I think that there are a couple different ways. Other states that have, you know, tribal sales or for example, have another, or a neighboring state especially, you look at the Carolinas, they have, we're one of the lower taxes and they're down with us as far as some of the lower tobacco taxes. Other states will have stamping. And it is something that we have done in the past, quite some time ago. I'm not an expert on it, but states will stamp cigarettes to track if they've been taxed or not. They're actually kind of like a little certificate that I think up on 7th floor they used to keep them in a safe, and you essentially, wholesalers, distributors have to put a stamp on every taxed carton so you know if they're taxed or not. But you're right, it is two cartons. I think from a regulation standpoint, what Representative Carlson brought up as well is if we do have essentially 44 cents a carton is one issue, but when we're talking 220 versus nothing, we essentially have to look at some other enforcement opportunities, and one is to mark those as tax has been paid, and if you have a car full of cartons and you're not, for example, a member of the registered member of the reservation or the tribe, you are essentially either owe tax or have some sort of penalty, because they would not be stamped. You shouldn't have more than two, and that would be an issue.
Senator Klein.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I'm not picking on you because I picked way back to Commissioner Clayburgh on this issue, because the stamps do nothing if there's no regulation, if there's no enforcement.
Right.
It's just a nice, fine way of running them through the machine, having an extra individual at the warehouse, and then, you know, we're left with selling ours legally.
Right.
There's no compliance. There's nobody, no enforcement, nobody to check to see where these came from. So, you know, I guess that's more the issue. That's just been kind of my pet peeve for 30 years. 35.
Representative Carlson?
Just last question here, Commissioner. I'm kind of piggyback on where Senator Schneider was at before. You feel comfortable with the number? Because this goes on the Secretary of State's website.
Yeah.
It says this is the fiscal effect of what's going to happen from this tax. With the information, I know there's a lot more to it here, all the diagnostics you can do on the cigarette tax. You feel comfortable with those numbers to have them on that site?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, as you know, with the fiscal notes that we produce, we do the best we can with the information we have. I will say that in the world of tobacco and a regulated industry, we actually have a lot more data than we have for other fiscal analysis that we have presented. So I feel very comfortable with all of the data, and based on the consumption numbers that we have and the elasticity numbers, I do feel comfortable.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Belcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I've done my arithmetic right, for a one pack a day person, that's $52.80 a month that they're going to spend in taxes, or a little over $100 a month for a two pack family. Is there any thought put into what impact that loss of money is going to have to the low income family? That because according to your data here, 75% of the people are still going to be smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the consumption will still be at 75%. So if they're spending $50 to $100 a month less, that would have an impact on revenue also.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Belcher, a good point. We didn't factor anything into this fiscal note, but you are right that there'd be less disposable income. That does have a ripple effect as far as spending money elsewhere. So that is a point not figured into our fiscal note, but we basically stayed to the static fiscal note on tobacco tax in this instance.
Yes, Representative Onsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, on the back side of your handout, you talk about distribution of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the first bullet point, it talks about general fund receiving 50%. Then you go ahead and say overall the initiated measure expected to reduce the general fund by that $1.8 million. So if they're getting that revenue, then I guess just explain that portion. Where's the loss at? Somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Monstead, there are a number of moving parts in this bill, and whether it's just an oddity that it worked out this way in our fiscal note, but much more of the tobacco tax revenue under current law goes to the general fund. What happens is under this bill that half of it goes to the general fund. The tax rate's higher, but a lower percentage goes to the general fund, and it just ends up that the rest goes to those two trust funds. So you have a higher tax, but at a lower percentage going to the general fund. It may have been worked that way to keep general fund whole. So basically you have two variables, one's going up, one's going down. So you have the increase in the tax rate, but then decrease in consumption, and then a decrease in the percentage going to the general fund. That's why that actually comes up to that $1.8 million reduction, essentially probably drafted for a hold even purpose.
Paul, just one more question. So I think some of the perception was the additional tax was going to those funds, but the original amount was going to just going to stay its source was just going to stay the same. What's currently there, and then that increase is going, so is that, this measure then saying that that whole tax is going elsewhere, or how is, if you understand what I'm saying, I think it's just a new tax is going to get split up in these new funds, and what currently is being collected would continue to go to the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstad, really the, what this does is essentially kind of wipe clean the old tobacco tax law, put it in a whole new base and a whole new distribution, and so it isn't kind of a, the old 44 cent stays and then the additional, the difference between that and the 220. It's a whole new system. And in that sense, you know, we, so I would say that the new system essentially will have money go to the general fund, a different, you know, at a different percentage, but dollar for dollar it'll stay essentially even. So it is a new system.
But you're saying if this passes, there will be any, really any dollars going to the general fund anymore?
No additional dollars. So about the same amount that's going in there right now will be going into the general fund. So the way we're looking at the fiscal note is, there really wouldn't be 1.8 is really more of a rounding number, but essentially the general fund will get what it's the same amount it's getting now. The additional tax that's collected because of the increased rate will be going to these two funds, that veterans fund and the other fund that's mentioned, so the health fund. So oddly, you know, from a fiscal note standpoint, it does come out even with general, with the general fund, and that might have been by design, but the new money, additional dollars that are brought in, will be going to the two trust funds.
Thank you. As I asked in the last item, if there are interested people want to comment about the fiscal impact of the initiated measure. Thank you. We will go on to measure number five. We now hear from the Department of Health regarding the estimated fiscal impact of the initiated statutory measure relating to the medical use of marijuana.
Good afternoon, Chairman Lundberg and members of the committee. I am R.B. Smith. I'm the Deputy State Health Officer. I will try to give you the shortest version I can of this, but I do need to provide you with some background information kind of as to how this works. The measure creates an act providing for the medical use of marijuana by registered, qualified patients for defined debilitating medical conditions through registered designated caregivers and compassion centers, or by growing their own marijuana. A qualified patient who does not grow their own could be dispensed up to 3 ounces of usable marijuana. Qualified patients and designated caregivers are allowed to have up to 8 marijuana plants, and compassion centers can have 1,000 plants. Depending on growing conditions, the amount of usable marijuana obtained from each plant varies greatly. The Act would create procedures for monitoring, inventorying, dispensing, cultivating, and growing marijuana, all of which would be regulated and enforced by the Department of Health. The Act provides for the registration of qualified patients, designated caregivers, and compassion centers by the Department of Health, and requires revenue to be deposited into the Compassionate Care Fund administered by the Department of Health. Qualified patients and designated caregivers are required to give local law enforcement officials notice of intent to grow marijuana. Compassion centers are required to conduct comprehensive inventories of all medical marijuana and monthly inventories of stored usable marijuana, and must notify the Department of Health and appropriate law enforcement authorities within 24 hours of discovery of any inventory discrepancy. In putting the fiscal note together, I contacted several state agencies to obtain information. Those included the State Tax Commissioner, the Department of Human Services, the Attorney General, Highway Patrol, Workforce Safety Insurance, Department of Corrections, and the West Fargo Police Department. The next piece of the fiscal note walks through the various sections of the measure that do indicate the cost factors related to the measure. But I do want to present to you a few things that significantly impact the cost of this measure. There are three characteristics, and those are: this measure does not limit the total number of qualified patients, designated caregivers, or compassion centers that will be allowed to use and grow medical marijuana. So this affects the number of permits that will have to be issued and tracked, number of inspections, all of our various work related to that. Some medical marijuana laws in other states significantly limit the number of individuals who can grow and sell. For example, some states will have one dispensary. And also, the measure allows for numerous methods to introduce medical marijuana, including vaporizing, edibles, smoking, tinctures, and so forth. There are other states that allow only cannabidiol oils, so that would significantly impact the costs related to this. And then finally, this measure allows medical marijuana to be used to treat a significant number of symptoms and diseases, including chronic back pain and intractable or hard-to-treat nausea. Those can be found on page 3 of the measure. And in other states, it is allowed only for one condition, such as epilepsy. So those three things significantly impact the costs related to this. I would refer you to the last page of the fiscal note, which has the summary of costs of the health department. So in developing this fiscal note, we had to make many assumptions and estimates, and the first one was to determine how many qualifying patients, designated caregivers, and compassion centers there might be in the state of North Dakota as a result of this measure. In order to do that, we looked at information from the state of Colorado, and we used them because they were the most experienced and had the most historical information available. We went back to the time when Colorado was medical marijuana only, as opposed to now where they are allowed recreational marijuana. And at that time, we looked at the number of users and designated caregivers they had, and took a percentage of their population and applied that percentage to the state of North Dakota's population. That was the best estimate we could come at to decide how many qualified patients, designated caregivers there could be. With regard to the compassion centers, there are a significant number of requirements related to becoming a compassion center, and so because of that, we estimated that there would only be two in the state, particularly in the first biennium. The qualifying patients were estimated at 16,500 and designated caregivers at 8,300. So on the summary fiscal page, I've broken it down by one-time costs and then biennial costs. The one-time costs were calculated at expenditures of $1.372 million, and less the income that we could achieve through the registrations, annual fees, and renewal fees, leaving a unidentified source or a cost gap of $154,000 in regard to the one-time costs. When we move over to the biennial costs, this is looking at a full 2 year of expenditures. We had a total of $7.3 million with 32 FTE and revenue at $4.8 million, leaving an unfunded gap of $2.534 million. I will, as far as the first biennium, the current biennium that we are in, we are required to implement this within 30 days of passage. I have to say that would be like impossible. So for one thing, we do not have the funding, the appropriation authority. We do not have the money. The money will come in as registrations are received and such, and nor do we have the FTE. And so I don't know how we're going to accomplish that, but we're going to need a little help. And so depending on whether there's an emergency commission or a deficiency bill or whatever will affect the start date of that and how much it will cost in the current biennium. I do want to talk about some of the assumptions we used here then. So as you can see, we counted revenue of let's look at the biennial numbers, $4.5 million for qualified providers and designated caregivers. In the I am on, I'm summarizing some of the assumptions here. Since the application fee for the amount for qualifying patients and designated caregivers is not stated in the measure, we had to make the assumption that we would set the fee to cover the costs. So we calculated the cost to do that portion of it, divided it by our estimated number of individuals to come up with a fee of $117 per year. That was an assumption we had to make. An annual renewal process is described, but a fee is not stated. Revenue estimates assume the renewal fee is equal to the application fee. Administrative overhead, we allocated equally to the registration process and then to the Compassion Care Center process. Section 1924.03.2G requires information on applicants, primary caregivers, which is not defined in the measure and has other legal definitions. Considering the measure in total, it appears that, and we had to make the assumption that, whenever in the measure they were referring to a primary caregiver, they meant the designated caregiver. That is a significant assumption we had to make, and we would feel much more comfortable if that were corrected.
I have one.
And then the revenue, when it came to the compassion centers, the amounts that we could charge for fees were stated in the measure, and they are not sufficient to cover the costs of the compassion centers. So that is where we come up with the $2.5 million uncovered costs. Because there is so little revenue that we are able to generate, and there was no other funding source stated in the measure to cover that, we will need a funding source to pay for that. I had mentioned startup costs. If we start in December somehow, we would need $2.4 million to finish out this current biennium. If we start after legislative session, $1 million, and then something else in between there. And then, as I stated, we do not have the spending authority or FTE or money to do this in the current biennium. One state that was similar, had laws similar to this measure, took 18 months to implement. And the measure does not provide a delayed start date for us. I'm going to move on to the other agencies quickly, and I am almost done and we'll be ready for some questions. So other agencies, the department, you can read those on the pages, let's see.
Four.
Start yeah, page four through most of the end of it. So the Department of Human Services indicated no impact. The Attorney General's Office gave us a fiscal note of $2.786 million for BCI, Bureau of Criminal Investigations. They also indicated impacts to the Crime Lab, Criminal Regulatory Licensing, Fire Marshal, State and Local Intelligence Center, but they do not know those amounts. North Dakota Highway Patrol indicated none at this time. Workforce Safety and Insurance indicated there would be significant impacts, but they are unable to estimate them and do any actuarial evaluation of that at this time. Department of Corrections indicated none. Local law enforcement, West Fargo Police, listed a number of items, impacts they would have, but they do not have an amount for that. And then finally, the tax department, they've indicated that the revenue from the sales of medical marijuana under this measure is taxable sales revenue, as it is not from prescribed drugs. So the role of the physician in this process is not to write a prescription for medical marijuana. The physician simply indicates that the individual has one of the qualifying conditions and that they are under the care of that physician. But the physician is not prescribing. That is why this is taxable revenue. And I do have their official statement included in the fiscal note. And this, they are unable to determine what that amount would be. It is really difficult to determine what the usage might be.
I can't believe they passed it.
And based on the available information, the amount of usable marijuana that can be obtained from an individual plant varies extremely, depending on how it is grown.
Might
base.
And making the and with the numerous methods of use allowed, it's really difficult to determine what revenue would be obtained from all those varying usages of marijuana. I did put the qualifying statement at the end of this. As you probably can tell, a lot of the basis here is the number of qualifying patients and designated caregivers and compassion centers that we had to estimate. We did the best with the knowledge that we had. If those differ, we could have additional negative fiscal impacts or positive fiscal impacts. I guess this concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions about it?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Axness.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, can you explain a little bit how you came up with the 16,500 potentially qualified people in North Dakota? I just saw it based on statistics, but can you just walk us through that?
Yes. So I don't believe we have the detailed numbers on us, but we went back to the year, and I believe it was 2006-ish maybe, a few years back, when the state of Colorado had medical marijuana legalized only. And so we looked at their population, and we received from them the numbers of individuals that were qualified patients in Colorado. And so we looked at the percentage, and then we took that percentage and applied it to the state of North Dakota's population.
Any other questions of Arby at this time? Well, thank you for putting it together. I'm sure it wasn't easy.
It was not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there anyone in the room that would like to comment on the estimated fiscal impact of the initiated measure? Okay. Now, what we need then from the committee is a motion to forward this to the Secretary of State.
Right. Mr. Chairman, motion to accept the fiscal statements and forward them to the Secretary of State.
And we already have a motion. We have a motion, thank you. And seconded. Any discussion? Can we call the roll then on the motion?
Senators Holmberg?
Aye.
Axness?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Shively?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Unruh?
Aye.
Wardner?
Aye.
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Belter?
Yes.
Devlin?
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes.
Holden?
Yes.
Onstead?
Yes.
Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion is carried. We have another item on our agenda today. As you recall, during the last session, we made changes and created some new committee rooms. And they are down just right, well, upstairs, but down the hall.
Yeah,
you're getting
a guide to find them, but there is really no.
Which ones do we name?
First, the witness. Yeah, these two would be whatever.
Okay.
A and B, and then this would be the regular.
Okay.
Two names.
Okay. So we are. If you've had the opportunity to go and look at the rooms, the rooms are quite nice. And we, one of the reasons we look at naming them, we went over that this morning in legislative arrangements, and we kind of ran out of time. And then there was kind of the consensus to short circuit, because at the end of the day, that committee would make their recommendation to this committee. And because we had run out of time, we looked at asking this committee what their thoughts were. If you look at the map that was presented, 132A and 132B, it's anticipated that particular area would have a name, and it would be whatever A and whatever B, or however we do it. 133 would have a different name. We were not looking at naming this one room, which at times will be a large or could be a large hearing room with the same name. There were a few names that were mentioned this morning at the Legislative Procedures and Arrangements Committee, and I can think of two of them, but I cannot think of the third one. One of them was the Cheyenne River Room. If you recall, when you look at where we are, that's where we are, you covered it up. We have names all over the map as far as legislative rooms. We have a number of them that are named and cited or come from Western North Dakota. We have a couple up in the north central, and then we have some general ones. We have a Prairie Room, we have a Harvest Room, we have the Sakakawea Room. And one of the names, and I'm not, can I say pimping for them? I'm not pimping for the names, but one of the names that was mentioned, I believe, was Representative Biggersaw had suggested that we consider the Cheyenne River Room. Someone else suggested the Coteau, which is that area between the Missouri River and actually the east, the Red River, that whole area. If you look at a map of where the names are associated, which you can't see. Oh, that's even worse. You will see that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them are Missouri River and west. You've got Fort Cotton, you've got, where did the one go? The Peace Garden, and then you've got the general names that I already mentioned. But there was another name, too, that was mentioned besides the Coteau and the Cheyenne River, and I can't remember what that was.
That's not what meets your eye, is it?
Well, we don't want to use that because you and Dee had to lose that name, so we're not going to go there.
Gosh, I was going to put that forward.
And the reason why it's kind of nice to get that done is because you've got the motor carriers that want to print their books. The rooms exist, and they are right now nameless.
Probably better.
Might be better than the main room. Senator Wardner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, personally, I like the names. I think they fit into the names that have been given to the rooms. And so I would like to see the large one, the 32A and B, called the Coteau, and the 133, the Cheyenne. And I'm going to move the motion.
We have a motion and a second by Senator Schneider. Discussion?
I'm not, we're not adversely affecting any Native American tribe, but...
No, I don't think so. We'll call a historical society.
Okay. Would you call the roll, please? Oh, excuse me. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only question I had, esteemed Senator said the Cheyenne, and I was assuming you meant the Cheyenne River Room, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes, it's Cheyenne River.
Thank you.
We're not going to get in trouble over that, are we? Hostile and abusive to anybody?
No.
I mean, really, they would have thought the Sioux would have been the wrong, but it's a Cheyenne. Last time I checked, that was a tribe.
Different spelling.
Different spelling, too. Neither one of us can
tell. Yeah, that's a different spelling. I agree with that, but that sometimes it may be different.
Okay, would you call the roll?
Senator Holmberg.
Aye.
Paxmas.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Shadley.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Unger.
Isn't that still pretty good?
Wardner.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Belcher.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Doctor.
Yes.
Hogan.
Yes.
Onstead.
Yes.
Move it. Schmidt.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
So it's Cattle 1 and Cattle 2?
Yep.
And the vacant 32A is Cattle 1 and 32B is Cattle 2.
A and B. Yeah, it's easiest. A and B, right?
Right.
There's a lot to talk about.
Cattle A and Cattle B, is that what it is?
Oh, pardon?
Is it 1 and 2 or A and B?
A and B. A and B is easier to utilize with the system. Then there is a question that might not be settleable. Is that a word? Settleable?
No, you can make it well.
Who is going to use them?
That's yet to be fought over.
Discussed.
Oh, discussed.
Not fought over. the doctor room. One of the things I think that those who make those kind of decisions, and they might already have the information, is what is the size of the various rooms we have? In other words, I do know that, and I'm not proposing any rooms, but the square footage?
Yeah, it's over here.
Ooh, there's some small ones. Ag and... Well, keep in mind,
is that show that we got taken on this deal, or this received it?
It's already done. It's a week. No, you've got to make allowances for the size of the committees, too. One can't just say that Senate X needs the same square footage because House X has twice as many members, and some of the tables take up a lot of space.
We have, in an average committee of ours, counting staff and clerks, is 18 people. I mean, we need 18 chairs at any given table in our committee rooms, and more than that for the big section of appropriations, which is in here. So, obviously, that we could take a look at that and say there's, and if we consolidated committees, if we took a look at the committee structure on ag and energy and some of those things, it would require a bigger room to do that. But that decision needs to be made.
Can't talk right now.
Mr. Chairman, we could update that schedule and
yeah.
Members so we could talk about it in November maybe.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah. I just think we have to take a look at it.
Yeah, we don't want to do assignments today because...
We gave 1,000 miles today with names.
I know. Okay.
That's a big deal. That's a tough one.
Is there anything else to come before us at this time? If not, I'll take a motion to adjourn. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned. You can do too bad. We don't want to
wait. No, I really don't care about games except I'm an old geography guy. Cattle is good.
I know it is. And maybe they will put a refrigerator in it.
Oh, what? That is nice.
No.
You're in this morning, you see the bricks?
No, I
see the cabinets. This whole back wall is cabinets and refrigerators. Kitchenettes. That's almost worth fighting. Kitchenettes, nice size.
Now, does that list have the new roof?